In Tazria Mitzora, the book of Vayikra, the book of Vayikra is something of an annoyance, I think, to people who are, you know, able to think about what they're learning. The parashas of Vayikra and Tzav, Vayikra and Tzav, are parashiyot about korbanot, none of which we do today. Shmini, okay, there's a Parsons of story, but then at the end you have the distinctions between animals that are edible and animals that are, should not be eaten, and they are called Tomei and Tahor by the Torah, right? The word Tomei is often translated as being unclean and Tahor as pure. I mean, I don't know if those translations are helpful, but that's in the parish of Shmini. Then we come to Tazria Mitzora, much of which is about Mitzorah, is about Mitzorah. But I don't know what exactly the scientific definition of Mitzorah might be. But let's assume that it's some kind of, a disease of the skin, right? You see something. Now, it's not debilitating, apparently, because there's a story in the Torah about Naaman in the Tanakh. Naaman, who was a general, who was an Aramaic general, who came to be cured of tzaraat to Israel. So the fact that he was a general seems to indicate that he was not, it did not impair him, it didn't limit him. The fact that he was a leper, right? That's what we call it, right? We call it a leprosy, a leper. I don't know exactly what leprosy is. It doesn't make any difference. But I remember when I came to Israel, there was a leper colony in Jerusalem. Before that, on the Barbanel Street or something, there was this building, and there were lepers there. I did not try to visit them, but it was a thing, and then they moved them further away. But so Naaman might have been unhappy about being a leper, but it didn't seem to stop him from doing whatever he's supposed to do. This story, the story in the Parashiyot about leprosy, includes more or less three different kinds of leprosy. Leprosy, I say tzaraat, let's say tzaraat, because then we can agree that we don't know what it is exactly. So tzaraat, there was tzaraat of a person. A person gets tzaraat. Then the tzaraat of the beged, another discussion, right, that the cloth of the clothes can also become, I don't know what word to use, infected by this tzaraat. And then this tzaraat habayit, that the stones that the house is made out of can also be affected. Now the Chachamim, as the Ramban will point out, the Chachamim thought that this somehow could not be regular, in spite of the fact that Naaman was a regular kind of tzaraat. We don't have any indication that it was miraculous. But we know that Miriam was punished by becoming mitzoraat. So Chachamim came to this conclusion that tzaraat is a miracle. In every case, it's not something that happens normally or regularly. It's always going to be a miracle. And in fact, they developed the idea that tzaraat is connected to Lashon Hara. That's because of Miriam. Right, Miriam spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu. She was punished. The punishment was tzaraat. Therefore, there's a connection between Lashon Hara and tzaraat. So then further, the Chachamim said that if a person talks Lashon Hara, he might find that his house afflicted. And that would be a warning sign, an early warning sign that in heaven, they're watching him, they know him, because it's very hard to punish Lashon Hara. It's very hard to punish Lashon Hara in a court, because it's hard to prove intention. It's hard to prove that what you say is something that you intended to create difficulty, right? All of that is very difficult, and therefore the tzaraat affects the walls of the house, the stones that the house is built out of, and so it gives you a heads up to do tshuva. If that doesn't work, then for the same person, then his clothes are going to be affected. And if he still doesn't do tshuva, then he'll be affected. This is all a major effort on the part of heaven to do away with lashon hara. That's the way Chachamim more or less understood it. But underlying all of these things, right? Vayikra tzav the korbanot, shmini the tumah v'tara, tazriya mitzora, this business of tzarat. Underlying all of these things is an interesting fact, and that fact is here in the Chumash. If you look at the first source, Vayikra Perek Yudal, it says, "Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe el Aaron lemor, ki tavo eretz Kenan." When you come to the land of Kenan, Asher ani notein lechem lachuza, which I will give to you, le'echoz, you'll be able to hold on to it. You'll be able to grab onto it, meaning that you'll be able to grow your own flocks in that, your own fruits in that land. And here the Chachamim couldn't understand. What do you mean, v'natati? I will definitely impose upon you. I will definitely give you this affliction called tzarat. Why definitely? Why do you say definitely? It could mean that it's an abstract sort of. I will make this a possibility. It will become possible to get in the desert. You're not going to get this affliction. But in Eretz Yisrael, you might. It doesn't mean that you will. It just means that the law will now include tzarat. So Rashi quotes Chazal. And Rashi says, "B'sarah ilayim," that this is good news. It's God is giving good news to the people. Shehanega'im ba'im aleihem. The good news that these afflictions will come upon them. Why? What's the good news? Lefishit minu emoriyim matmoniyot shel zahav bekirot batehem kol 40 shana shayu Yisrael bamidbar. Hitminu, they hid. The Amorim, the Amorites, the Amorim, the people who lived, the people, all the seven nations that lived in Eretz Canaan are also called Amorim. Amori is one of the seven nations, but sometimes in the Torah and in Chazal, they're all included under the general name of Amorim. Matmoniyot are treasures. Right, matmon, something that tastes good, but matmoniyot shel zahav, they put all of the gold that they had, bekirot batehem, in other words, they would take out the stones, they would make a kind of a space, and they'd put stuff in there, and then put the stone back. So you wouldn't be able, because they knew the Jews were coming, and they thought the Jews would conquer the land, but that somehow they would get away with it, and be able to carry on with their treasures. So because of this affliction that the house had, God sort of like, it had something to do with stones, either with the in-between the stones, but in any event, you went into a house, you saw that this tzarat was on the wall of the house, you took out a stone and you'd find gold and silver stuff hidden. So Rashi says, "Bisarahilah," that this is not like the tzarat of the skin of the bob, of the person, and the tzarat of the cloth of the clothing that he wears, but this is something else. Tzarat habayit has nothing to do with the punishment at all, according to this Rashi, but has to do with the fact that this was good for the Jewish people. This was good for the Jewish people. So you see that according to Rashi, the Tzarat HaBayit is distinct. It's set aside. It's not what I just told you, Chazal say, that first you get it in your house. But I guess that has to do with Jews. It was the punishment of Lashon Hara. Rashi, the Chazal say, the punishment of Lashon Hara is Tzarat. Punishment of Lashon Hara is Tzarat. So this Tzarat affects the Jewish home. This Pasuk, according to Rashi, affects the non-Jewish home. They're not concerned about Lashon Hara, but they're concerned about hiding their gold and silver. And the Jews were given this opportunity to get, when they came to Eretz Canaan, to get the gold and the silver. Okay, so we know a little bit about Tzarat HaBayit. Let's move on. If you look at the bottom of the page, you see the bottom page, Dvarim Perikaf Aleph, it says, Ki yeh le'ish ben sorer umoreh. Ben sorer umoreh. Sorer is like to go aside, to move aside. A son who doesn't go in the straight path, but goes a little bit off. Umoreh. And we'll see what Rashi says. And the pasuk itself explains, Einenu shomea b'kol aviv b'kol imo, which becomes a problem for Chazal. What if he doesn't listen to his father or his mother? It should be sufficient to say he doesn't listen. They didn't say he doesn't listen to his father and his mother. He doesn't listen. V'yisru oto. And they punish him. They actively beat up on him. V'lo yishma aleihem. And he doesn't listen. V'hatavsu bo aviv v'imo. And they grab onto him. They bring him out to the court. The court in those days was found near the Shar Ha'ir, the gateway to the city. I guess there were rooms in the wall, rooms that were made into the wall. That's where the Dayanim, sat. El Ziknei Iro, El Shar Mekomo. And the father and the mother come. And they say to the Skenim, Bineinu ze sorer umore, Einenu shomea bekoleinu, Bineinu ze sorer, more, because he doesn't listen, he doesn't follow, he doesn't accept, right? He's the Ben Harasha of the Haggadah. He says, he's Beze sorer more, Einenu bekoleinu. And then they add on, Zolel, V'sovei, which is like a kind of mystery, which we will see. Zolel sounds lolel v'sovei, sounds like he overeats. He just keeps eating all the time. Urigamu kol anshei iro b'avanim v'met. So the skenim, they hear the witness that was brought by the father and the mother, and they stone him, and he dies. Ubiat arami kirbecha v'kol Yisrael yishbu v'yirav. So to our sensitivities, our like ideas that education is very important, that all parents are educators, and you have to somehow work to educate your children. Here it seems to be a little bit kind of, I wouldn't say contrary to the idea that you have to be sensitive to your children, but it's a little bit harsh to say that if you have a child who overeats, that you should kill him. I mean, that doesn't sort of sit well. But let's look at Rashi a little bit. Sorer Rashi says, Sar min haderech. Okay, today, you know, min haderech means doing the mitzvahs. If you say Sar min haderech, so you know it's a book about Baalei Tshuva or Baalei Sheila. But this means he doesn't do what he's supposed to do. Umoreh. Misarev bidvar aviv. He denies his father's request. Lishon mamrim. Vayisru oto, the pasuk says, you have to afflict him. Rashi says, matrimbo b'fnei shlosha malkin oto. First, matrimbo hatra'ah. Hatra'ah means you go and you say, if you do this, then this is the punishment that you will receive. So matrimbo umalkin oto, and you give him malkot, stripes. Ben sorer umore eino chayav. Ach yignov v'yochal tarmitar basar v'yishteh chatzi log yayin. This guy that we're talking about, the Ben Sorer Umoreh, I'm reading Rashi, eino chayav, he's not guilty until he steals and eats. Again, Rashi's giving me a halachic position. It's not just that he overeats, but what he's eating is what he stole. He stole tarmitar timar basar, a little bit of meat, v'yishtech hatzi log yayin, and a half a log of wine, small amount, shenemar, zolel v'sovei. So the pasuk sort of explains itself. What did he do wrong? Where's his sarmen aderech? What's he denying? Well, he stole and he ate. He ate what he stole. How much? Well, there's a shear. There's an amount that you have to... Ben Sorero More, now you have this amazing statement in Rashi, Ben Sorero More Neherag Al Shem Sofo. Something that I think is unacceptable today. In other words, you judge, the Torah gives you a hint. The Torah says, if you find somebody who does this, who eats food of a certain amount that he stole and doesn't listen to his father and his mother, then it's hopeless. There's no educational effort that can correct the situation. Can't. He says, Ne'erag al shem sofo, he's killed because of what will be of him. He gia Torah l'sof dato. The Torah understands what it is that he's thinking about. Sof shemichale mamon aviv umevakesh limudo ve'no motze. At the end, he will destroy everything. He'll take away all his father's money, and he won't be able to do what he's supposed to do. And he puts himself in a crossroads, you know, like they have. Every neighborhood has today, thankfully, some group of pushtakim, you know, like kids who make trouble. Every neighborhood in Yerushalayim has that. Amra Torah Yamut Zakai Val Yamut Chayav. Oh, please. Like the Torah says, we better kill him now when he still hasn't done any major transgressions. If we wait, he will do something terrible, and then we would have to kill him when he's Chayav. Anyway, that's what it says. This is about Ben Sorero Moray. Now, if you turn the page, let's look at this Gemara. You see this Gemara? The Gemara starts in the middle of page 2. There's a Gemara, Machzeret Sanhedrin, Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph. The Mishnah. Haya Aviv Rotzeh, V'imo Eino Rotzeh. Right? Remember the Pasuk says, V'kol Aviv V'kol Imo, that they're both involved. What happens if the father wants to arrest his son, but the mother doesn't want to? Aviv Eino Rotzeh, V'imo Rotzeh, or the opposite. Right? Eino na'aseh ben sorer umoreh ad shiyushneihem rotzin. So that's the way the Mishnah understands the Pasuk. Both the father and the mother have to bring the son to court. Right? To Shar Iro. The mother and the father. Ad shiyushneihem rotzin. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Im lo haita imo re'uya l'aviv, Eino na'aseh Ben Sorero More. He says another way of saying the same thing, right? That there's another possibility. It's not important for us. Gemara, you see the Gemara? Ma einai reuya. What is Rabbi Yehuda talking about? Ilema chayve kriitot v'chayve mitot beidin. So sof avua. One second. Keman Azla Detanya. Here. The fifth line in the Gemara, if you look at the middle of the lines, that's Keman Azla. Kemi Holech. Who does this Mishnah represent? Whose opinion? Ha Detanya. You see it? Ha Detanya. Ben Sorer Umoreh Lo Haya V'lo Atid Leiyot. Oh. All the problems are solved. All the problems are ben sorer moreh lo haya v'lo atid liyot. Right? So if you want to know v'lama nechtav, so why did the Torah have all these psukim if there's never going to be a ben sorer moreh? He says drosh v'kabel sachar. A wonderful idea, drosh v'kabel sachar. What does that mean? What do you think it means? You should learn it, right? And you get schar. What schar do you get? What? Well, it can't be. We have a lot of other psukim in the Torah for schar limud. What do I need ben zorah mora for schar limud? So it must mean droshva. It's like an idea. Droshva kabel schar means if you learn about the ben zorah mora, it's as though you did what the Torah wants you to do. That if you had such a situation, you would do what the situation demanded upon you. It's true, there never was, and there won't be. But you can fulfill the Torah demand by learning the psukim. I'm not sure I made that clear. In other words, it's a mitzvah. In a certain situation, ben sorero more is a mitzvah. Now, nobody wants to be in that situation, right? But if that situation arose, you'd have to act. Since lo haya v'lo nivra, since there's never going to be a ben sorero more, so the Gemara says, drosh v'kabel schar. It's as though you did it. It's as though you actually took. And now this wonderful idea, which is explained further, Kaman Rabbi Yehuda, that's Rabbi Yehuda meant, Ibait Eimor Rabbi Shimoni. There are those who say that the Mishnah is Rabbi Shimon's Mishnah, Netanya. Omar Rabbi Shimon, V'chim ibn Shachal Zetar Kimar Basar V'shatach Hazilo Yayin Ha'italki Yavibi Momot Sino Tol Nisaklo. What are you, joking? This son, he ate a salami sandwich and drank a little wine, so his parents are going to bring it to kill him? He says, no parent is going to do that. I mean, it's another way of saying lo haya v'lo nivra. Lo haya v'lo nivra could mean that there's never such a case. But it could also mean that the father and the mother are not going to bring him, not going to bring their son to the court and say, kill him if he just ate a salami sandwich. I mean, that's kind of a little bit radical. Ella lo haya. And then he says, no, so what I mean to say is, there was never a ben sorer more, and there will never be a ben sorer more. V'lama nichtav, drosh v'kabel sachar. Okay? That's position A. Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Shimon Elazar. He says, then the Mishnah Gemara goes on, he says, Omar Rabbi Yonatan, ani reitiv, v'yashavdi, kivros, Rabbi Yonatan, what are you talking about? I saw a ben soreh or moreh, right? You know, I'm a moreh derech or something, and I was around, and there he was. He said, Yashavti al kivro. I even know where he's buried. They killed him, they buried him, and I sat there on his grave. Kimana azla adetanya. Who is that girl according to? Ira nidachat lo itab lo atida liyot. Right, there's a halacha in the Torah that if 50%, more than 50% of the people in the city are of the Avodah Zarah, then you destroy the entire city. Right, that's called Ir Anidachat. So again, the Gemara says, or this writer says, he says, Lo haita, v'lo haita in aliyot, also Ir Anidachat. There's never been such a thing. V'lama nichteva, Jerusha kabel sechar, the same idea. Same thing, you learn the Psukim of Ir Anidachat, it's like you did it. Kiman ki Rabbi Eliezer, the Tanya Rabbi Lazar Omer, kol Ir Shiyeshba afilu mezuzah achat, einana seit Ir Anidachat. What do you think about that? So if there's a city, and one house in the city, there's a guy who put a mezuzah on his door, and even if more than 50% of the people in the city are over there, but it's all, doesn't count. They're not in the parasha, you don't have to destroy the city. My Tama. Omar Krav et kol shilala tekabetzel toch rachamva v'sarafta ba'esh v'kevan de'ika mezuzah lo efshah. You can't take the mezuzah off the door and burn it. Right? So you can't do it. You can't do what the Torah asks you. The Torah asks you to burn the whole city down, but there's a mezuzah, you can't burn the city down. Dechtiv lo tasun kein Hashem elokechem. Amar Rabbi Yonatan. So Rabbi Yonatan, again, he's like the nudnik here. He says, I saw an ir anidachat v'yashavti al tila, and I sat down on the pyre that was left after the city was totally destroyed. Geman Azla Adetanya. Right? Another position. Bayit HaMenuga. Here we are. We're back to our parsha. Right? Bayit HaMenuga. Lo haya v'lo atid li yot. It's not Rashi's Bayit Menuga. It's a Jewish Bayit Menuga. Right? Lo haya v'lo atid li yot. V'lava nechtav. How come? How come it's in the Torah? Drosh v'kabel schar keman ki Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon did not. What did he say? Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon omer, lo olam en abayit hamei, ad shireh shirei grisin al shnei avadim. You need two little spots on two different stones in order to make it tamei. B'shtei ketalip, on two different walls, b'keren zavit, on the place that the two walls meet each other. You have to have a little spot on this stone, a little spot on this stone. It's impossible. The standards are so demanding that you could never get to the point where you'd have to actually destroy the house or declare it tamei. He says, "Enabai tamei atir ekshtei grisin shnei avadim shnei ketalim mikaren zavit." Three lines on the bottom. Al kokesh make grisin rachokuris. My Talmud, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Ketiv, Kir, the Kir Kativ, Kirot, Ezu Kir, Shuki Kirot. He said, when is there a Kir singular, Kirot plural? Is when you have two Kirot facing each other in that way. And then, of course, Omar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Sadok, Bakoma Yabitchum Aza, remember Aza, you know where that is? Rayukorino Tachubita Sagirta. They call that place the place of destruction, right? Sagirta, where they put away the things that were destroyed. Amar Rabbi Shimon Ishkvar Akol Pam Achad Alachti LeGalil, right? Imakom Shemitzaynin Oto V'Amru Avanim Menugaot Pinu L'Sham. So in every case, you have this remarkable idea, which is called Drosh V'Kabel Sechar. And then you have somebody who thinks that they actually saw it. So what's so important about this? It seems to me. Did we start over again? There's no book of the Torah that's as foreign to us, ab initio, as the book of Vayikra. You know, Korbanot. We have nothing to do with Korbanot. Most of the animals that are listed in the list of animals that are Tahor and Tamei, we don't even know what they are. We know that some of them, we know a few, we eat these and we don't eat those, but the list is quite long and extensive. And we don't relate to the list as a list. We don't go to look for those animals that are legally edible. We eat what we eat. And then finally we get to Tazria Mitzora. We have nothing to do at all with these parshiyot. So in modernity, people have asked that question. Well, how is it possible that the Torah doesn't relate to us? And then they found this Gemara in Sanhedrin. And the Gemara says, "Lo haya v'lo nivra," that not only it's not just the result of the warp, the woof of history that changes us, right? There's no Beit HaMikdash. There's no Beit HaMikdash, so no Beit HaMikdash. We can't do all of the things that are demanded of us in the Beit HaMikdash, but we can substitute hope. We can substitute hope for what we don't have. We can say, we'll have it. We hope to have it. We'll go to shul every Shabbos and we'll daven musaf. Right? And musaf means we hope that we'll be able to give the korban musaf in the future. That's what he says. We don't do it, but we have hope. But the nature of that hope is not defined to us. Hope. You don't even say, look at David there. But this parasha, which relates to three separate mitzvot, Ben Sorer Moreh, Ir HaNidachat, and Habayit HaMenuga, Those are the three mitzvot that are discussed in the Torah. What are those? What does the Gemara say about those three mitzvot discussed in the Torah? Lo haya, v'lo nivra. In other words, there is a Torah. There are psukim in the Torah about which you could say, lo haya, v'lo nivra. So if lo haya, v'lo nivra, why are they in the Torah? Drosh, v'kabel sachar, which means that if you learn those psukim, and you understand them, and you have the halachic material under control, then you are mekabel sachar. You get not the sachar of Talmud Torah, which you would get learning anything. You get the sachar of doing the mitzvah of Ben Sorer Umoreh, Ira Nidachat, and Bayit HaMenudah. You actually did it. You actually did it. You participated. This is like a wondrous idea. This is a wondrous idea which kept the Jews going, because when they had this problem with the Beit HaMikdash, there's no Beit HaMikdash. It's okay, we deserve to be punished. But how could it be that we are punished by not being able to do what the Torah wants us to do? That didn't make sense. That didn't make sense to the people. They couldn't understand why God would punish them in a way that would deny them the opportunity of doing mitzvot. Now, of course, like every question, you could answer that question. But I want to suggest that what kept us going was this idea of drosh v'kabel schar. That's what we live on. We live on that there's a reality to learning Torah. It's not just about information. Adarabba, you can see it very clearly. There's a difference, even today, between those kinds of places, yeshivot or kolonim, where the emphasis is on information. You want to be a dayan. A dayan has to have a lot of information under his belt. So he studies the information, he takes the tests, he tries to get a job. That's dayanut. But yeshivot, what they called in Israel correctly, even though I'm not sure they know what they're saying, in yeshivot lita'iyot, the emphasis is on learning. It's not on finishing. It's not on knowing. You know, there's always the joke, you know, when the yeshiva guys go out with the shidduch with the girl, the boy goes with the girl. He waits till the girl makes the bracha on the ice cream because she knows what bracha to make. He never learned that. He really doesn't know anything about how to make a bracha. It's a little tricky, but you know, if he goes out a lot, he'll get good at it. So drosh v'kabel sachar is a kind of almost a hallucination, right? You imagine that you're doing this Torah obligation, which doesn't exist. There's no, right, lo haya v'lo nivra. Lo haya v'lo nivra. So when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, so the Gemara says, where it says, okay, you can't bring a korban tamid, you can't bring the korban, but what can you do? You could learn the parsha of tamid. Well, you could learn the parsha of tamid, of course you can. You can learn any parasha you want. He said, no. It's somehow, it takes the place of actually doing it. And that's why in the Siddur, if you look in your Siddur before Pesukei Dezimra, right, there's a lot of pages that most people who go to shul have learned to skip. But the pages are there, right? They didn't usurp the pages. So the pages are pages of Talmud Torah. Because you make a bracha, men and women, which is a separate discussion. Make a bracha that the bracha of Talmud Torah, right? Yes. So then you don't have to learn Torah at that moment. The bracha is good for the whole day, but in order to make sure that you don't mess up during the day and forget to learn something, so we learn something. It's in the Siddur. The Siddur says, do read this, read that. You know, it's like learning. It's all learning. What do you learn? You learn Karbanot. Your korbanot, the korbanot that we don't give anymore, right? That's why we do it, because it's drosh v'kabel schar. The Gemara says, the Gemara in different Gemara, not the Gemara in Sanhedrin, but the Gemara in Menachos. The Gemara says, if you say the parsha of korban tamid, of the daily sacrifice, it's as though you gave the daily sacrifice. It says the korban tamid was given by the Jewish people in its entirety, right? Everybody gave a machzit shekel once a year, and that money was used for the korban tamid. So that means that every day when the korban tamid was given, once in the morning and once in the afternoon, it was given as a gift of the entirety of the Jewish people. The Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. We don't do it anymore, but we can learn the parasha of korban tamid. It's not just we're learning the parasha of korban tamid, you know, we shouldn't forget that such a thing exists, but we're learning the parasha of korban tamid because somehow drosh v'kabel sechar. It works. It works somehow. We didn't give it up. We're not just pining for the Beit HaMikdash. We're doing somehow on some level. This I'm not able to evaluate, but we're doing on some level what the Torah wants us to do, which is, after all, every day the Korban Tamid is given, but the Jews, the people are not there. Right? The people are wherever they are. They just gave the money once a year, and they get credit for it. So if we come every day and learn the parasha of Korban Tamid, so it's not less than the Jews did in the days that the Beit HaMikdash existed. But in any event, what I meant to say is that if the most remarkable thing that happened in Jewish history was that we abstracted it, we actually said we could do without the Beit HaMikdash. We could live. We could live as Jews and be what we want to be. And there's no Beit HaMikdash. How do we do that? How do we accomplish that? That remarkable feat. I said somehow we came up with this idea. All of Jewish history came up with this idea that you could learn Torah. And that learning Torah is not simply a preparation for a job in which you have to know Torah. That's not why we learn Torah. We learn Torah because it's an event. It's an experience. We're experiencing whatever it is that we're learning. And that's morphed into Torah being the great experience of all experiences. And if it's the greatest experience of all experiences, so you can live. You can exist. Okay, we know we don't have this, we know that. The Rambam says in Sefer Mitzvot, at the end of Mitzvot, I say that, how many Mitzvot are there? How many mitzvot are that we have to keep today? The Rambam says 65. Not so many. There's not so many. I mean, I want to argue about the number, but it's not compared to the number of mitzvot that exist. It's very few. So how do we overcome this kind of aberration where it would seem that you could argue that God doesn't want us to keep the Torah or keep the mitzvot? So we say, no, we can keep the mitzvot in the drosh v'kabel sechar method, which is, I think, rather amazing. And I don't know a parallel to that, which doesn't mean that there isn't a parallel. It's just that I don't happen to know what I think it's. And that somehow the Jewish people got through it. You know, they got through the Churban Beit HaMikdash, and they got through the idea that it's over. That it's all over because the Beit HaMikdash was so important. Beit HaMikdash is so important. So again, we go back to our parashiyot. Parashiyot Korbanot, parashiyot Tumah V'Tahara, and the parashiyot of Mitzorah. And you say, I mean, it's not relevant to anything. I remember, I think in the Hertz Chumash, you know the Hertz Chumash? Used to be such a thing, which had articles in it, some written by Rabbi Hertz and some written later on by Rabbi Jacobowitz. It was like the English version of Art Scroll, but it was not colorful. English. And so there's an article there by either Rabbi Hertz or Rabbi Jacobowitz about Korbanot. You know, it was very defensive. Very defensive kind of.
Who was Rabbi Hertz exactly?
He was the chief rabbi of the British Commonwealth.
Okay.
Within reasonable amount of time, so that it's not ancient history.
Okay. I've never heard of it.
But it preceded our child.
Okay.
This is Mituzach Litbarimin. You know, you don't have to show off that you don't know something. It's okay.
Wait, life without the Beit HaMikdash isn't the same. It shouldn't be the same quality as if you would have it. We can survive.
I didn't say it's the same. I didn't say it's the same. I'm just saying that somehow we develop this idea that if I learn about the Beit HaMikdash, if I learn about the Korbanot, I am in some way, manner, or form doing what the Torah wants me to do. I'm not saying it's the same. I mean, we still want to have a Beit HaMikdash, but we're not back down to zero. We're not back down to a place where you say, look, all we are two-thirds of Torah. Or you know, we say something else. We say you can learn the Torah, and it is interesting. It is interesting that there are differences. There are differences, like in the Bavli, there's Sra'im. In Eretz Yisrael, they still did mitzvot that were connected to Eretz Yisrael, to the land. But in Bavel, they didn't. So there's a difference in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. But forget about that. Let's go back to our discussion, which is about the book of Vayikra. It's about the book of Vayikra. The book of Vayikra is very heavily laden with rabbinic interpretation, with implications and diukim and fine points. And all of that, I think the Netziv says it in his introduction to the book of Vayikra, in spite of the fact that most of these halachot don't apply to us. We don't do them. We don't act. We don't do all the halachot. We do any of the halachot that are connected to Korbanot or the Beit HaMikdash or outside of Eretz Yisrael, the Trumot and Masrot. What we do is only Midrabbanan. But we don't maintain the Doraita situation of all of these mitzvot. Nevertheless, drosh v'kabel sechar, you could say that we do it. That if you get into it, that if you learn the halachot of Eretz Yisrael, or you learn the halachot of Tumah v'Tahara, you learn the halachot of Bayit HaMenugah, right? You learn the halachot of Bayit HaMenugah, so you're in there. Right, somehow you are you're being credited with performing the mitzvah, and I think that's what kept our connection to the Torah going. Right, that's what kept it all. That somehow, in some way, manner, or form, we're doing the right thing about those mitzvot, the mitzvot that I can't do actively, but I can learn about them. I can try to understand. I could try to understand about that.
The relationship should be like with Pesach. We have to feel like we're going out. No, so if you think about the Korban, is it the best way you should feel like you're doing it? You know what I'm saying? You can read them every morning. You read the same thing over and over again, but you feel like it. And Pesach, you have to feel like you're really doing it.
Yeah.
Pesach is the opposite stuff that you have to have it in front of you. You have to show it, touch it, eat it.
But you're not going out of Egypt.
No, but you're doing it. Going the opposite of abstraction, instead of just talking.
But you're not going out of
I would say Pesach, you're telling a story, and when you tell a story, whatever aids you have in telling the story are useful, are positive, and that's what they became part of the halacha. You have to point at the matzah, you have to pick it up sometimes, you have to hold the wine cup. I mean, it's all part of telling the story. All part of telling the story. You could add. You could add things besides the things that have become part of the canon of the storytelling. You can add other things if you want to that help you to tell the story. Here we're talking about something that is psychedelic almost. You know, it's like something that is not where you're convincing yourself that you're doing the mitzvah by learning the mitzvah, which is like a very special kind of idea. I think it's like not something that most people would go for, but we went for it, right? We the Jews, more or less, over time, we've gone for it in a big way.
But in truth, in the yeshivas, traditionally they started learning Torah with the kids in Vayikra.
I think there was a different
idea across to them. That
yeah, there was a different reason. I'm not sure. I don't know how they could put honey into the chumash. How do you get it out? But in any event, yeah, you know, that's to do with because the children are pure. And that's like our deficiency. We look at the children, we say, well, I wish I could think like they think, because everything is very simple to them. You know, very, very, they assume that you're telling them the truth. That's like a big thing. It takes a long time till you figure out that there are people who don't always tell the truth. And so that so a child learns, that's why when you build the Beit HaMikdash, the halacha is that you have to keep the Tinokot Shel Beit Rabban, they keep learning. Everybody's on vacation because the Beit HaMikdash is being built, but the Tinokot Shel Beit Rabban keep learning because Hevel Pihem, because it's very hard for anybody to duplicate the truthfulness of whatever they say. Children believe absolutely. It takes time till you become cynical about whatever it is that you were supposed to believe in. Okay. Have a good shot.